All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. And our first guest on the show today is Jason Leopold. He's an investigative reporter and deputy managing editor at truthout.org. He's the author of the national bestseller News Junkie, a memoir. Welcome back to the show. How's it going, Jason?
Hey, Scott. Good to be back with you. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here. Now, you've been covering Guantanamo Bay at Truth Out here lately and doing a lot of great work. I think I've pretty much caught up on interviewing you about all of these recent pieces. The latest here is called Filling in the Gaping Holes in WikiLeaks Guantanamo Detainee Files. Now, you ain't blaming WikiLeaks for having an incomplete file, but...
Definitely not.
as you were saying on the show the other week, you learned quite a bit from the WikiLeaks Guantanamo Detainee Files, but apparently... not quite enough to get a truthful narrative. So now you're going back and filling in some of the gaps, what we already know about Guantanamo Bay and how the new documents from the WikiLeaks cache fit into what we already know.
Yeah, and basically what these documents – I mean, the reason I did this was for several reasons, but the two most important reasons are – the intelligence that these detainee assessment briefs, these DABs, D-A-Bs, what they the government refers to them as, you know, they contain many, many assertions, and it would appear to just the average reader that these individuals are in fact the worst of the worst, which is what, you know, Donald Rumsfeld and other Bush administration officials have, how they refer to them. And, you know, the other reason is because the media who has not, or the media at large, which has not, you know, in my opinion, done the best job uncovering Guantanamo, has really taken these files and printed or reprinted the allegations contained in them, pretty much, you know, just reprinting it without any questions asked. So what I wanted to do was really try to let readers know how this so-called intelligence on each individual was obtained, perhaps. You know, as I said, the intelligence or the information on the threat that these detainees posed, it does not contain any information as to how the government obtained that information from the detainees. So I went back, you know, several years back to look at other sets of documents, which I felt would provide a clearer picture to people as to how this information was obtained. And basically, these are old FBI emails that from back in 2004. Maybe 2005, if I'm not mistaken, in which the FBI sent out a notice to all of their agents, officers who had been working at Guantanamo, and asked them to respond with anything that they felt, you know, more or less showed that, you know, abuse was taking place. Detainees were being, you know, tortured. And, you know, as I looked at those documents, as I looked at those emails and the descriptions, it became clear that the detainees would more or less say anything just to get the torture to stop. And that information just ended up in these, you know, obviously, in these WikiLeaks files. So it really doesn't provide, you know, if one were able to see, for example, Abu Zubaydah, you know, the high value detainee, and all of the information it said there, that it says about him, if it were to say, well, he said this information while, you know, being waterboarded, I think the public may, is smart enough to say, well, you know, perhaps I cannot trust that. In one, FBI email that I quoted literally right out of the gate from, you know, beginning the story, you know, it says that the detainee was sitting in the corner, freezing cold, literally pulling his hair out. We don't know who that detainee is, but I think that if the public knew that, you know, whoever the detainee is and the information that it is alleged about him came as a result of being, you know, tortured for nearly an entire day, perhaps, you know, they would call into question the government's assertions about these individuals.
Yeah, well, but that doesn't seem to make any difference if anybody calls any of this into question anyway, but it'd be nice just for footnote's sake, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's important to, look, I think it's very important to have a historical record, particularly when you have Bush administration officials and others continuously out there trying to rewrite the narrative, control the narrative, and you don't have anyone, frankly, when it comes down to it, in our government, or I'm sorry, Democrats, challenging that. So it really, this has become, Scott, perhaps not a surprise, a partisan issue, where it's Republicans saying torture is good, Democrats saying, torture, maybe it's not so great, but it didn't get the intelligence. So no one's willing to look at the facts here and to say that this is what happened. These are why the documents are important. This is why you cannot trust the documents and why you should, look at it closely and question the veracity of the information there. Now, we have 172 detainees left at Guantanamo. Many have been cleared for release. You have the Uyghurs that are there, the Yemenis, and when it comes down to it, the vast majority of them were innocent. They were sold, we had this discussion before, they were sold, for bounty, but there's nothing that we have been given to show that the information they provided was obtained through torture.
Well, now, how widespread was all the torture at Guantanamo Bay? Because, it seems like the people who, most of whom went through the worst tortures, they went through the worst tortures at CIA black sites at former Nazi and Soviet bases in Poland or in torture dungeons in Thailand or Morocco or something, and then were brought to Guantanamo. But then the one case that I know the specifics of, because the logs were published in Time magazine, in 2005, was the torture of Katani, the so-called 20th hijacker, who was refused entry into the country, or came back later or something, and they got him. And this was the one that people might remember ABC News reported, that his torture was choreographed in the White House, that all of the principals, Rice, Colin Powell, Dick Cheney, John Ashcroft, Donald Rumsfeld, George Tenet, all of them except George Bush, I guess, choreographed the torture of this guy, Katani, step by step by phone. And this is the one where John Ashcroft, the attorney general at the time, wondered out loud, why are we doing this in the White House? History is not going to look kindly on this. Of course, he didn't have to fear for a jury.
That's for sure.
So I was wondering, anyway, to get to the point, please tell us about what you know about the torture of Katani, and then, to what degree did the other 760 or so inmates at Guantanamo Bay have to endure the same level of torture?
Or what level did they have to endure? Sure. And the torture of Katani, what's interesting, Scott, is that as I went through these old FBI emails, which are available publicly, people can go out there and read them for themselves. I believe I could, put a link in the story. There are actually several emails from FBI officers that are actually describing a specific detainee who turns out to be Katani, which I was totally unaware of when these documents were first released, years ago. And it became clear that the individual they're describing is Katani because of, as you indicated, what we know now from those logs. So Katani was set up with he was targeted or actually singled out for a specific interrogation plan. He was tortured to the point, I spoke to the former chief prosecutor of Guantanamo last week, Colonel Morris Davis, and he said that, from what he understands, Katani was tortured to the point where, he's no longer mentally stable. Susan Crawford, who is the, the former, head judge over at Guantanamo, said, we tortured Katani, Al Katani. And, like I said, these FBI emails certainly give a insight that, his torture was micromanaged, as you indicated, from the White House. But in terms of Guantanamo in general, torture, and I say this often, it does not just entail waterboarding. Torture was widespread at Guantanamo. It involved, cold, extreme temperatures, isolation. Look, for all we know, it could have involved, as we indicated, the use of drugs in which detainees did not give their informed consent, as I reported with Jeff Kay. There were regular beatings. There were just, these immediate reaction force teams that were called in to respond to, any disturbances. They were looking for a reason to torture detainees. I will tell you that I spoke to a former JAG attorney who was at Guantanamo, and, this person looked at DVDs. Everything was videotaped there. And photographs where, detainees were bloodied, their faces were bloodied from basically getting beaten. So, my conversations with former guards, the look at these FBI emails, which clearly are not, do not show that, they did not discuss all 779 detainees who were there. But I think when you put that all together, Scott, it shows that the abuse of prisoners was widespread, happened often, and was quite brutal. There are still unanswered questions about suicides supposedly that took place at Guantanamo. Look, the issue of hunger strikes that recently I reported one that just took place about a month and a half ago. The way that they force feed detainees, when it comes down to it, that's looked at as a form of torture. I mean, Guantanamo in general, and I'll repeat this as well, is referred to or has been referred to as a battle lab, meaning the prison itself is an experiment. So it's very important as we get right back into this ridiculous debate about torture, the usefulness of Guantanamo, is to not forget, the crimes that, that were committed there over the past 10 years that this administration, the Obama administration, simply refuses to, frankly, really acknowledge. Forget about investigate, just acknowledge. And, largely because they're perpetuating it at this point. It was widespread. And if anyone is going to read those WikiLeaks files, which are government files. They were the ones that were released, to WikiLeaks. They're not the ones who put them together, as you indicated. It's really important to then take another set of files, as I indicated, these FBI emails, and give those a read. And I think at least it would help you make, or help people make an informed decision, an understanding as to how this intel was obtained, why it's unreliable, and largely, in addition to that, why the U.S. was just so dead set on, holding these people.
Well, I guess I'm really showing the gray whiskers in my beard here, and I'm sure I just sound like an old fuddy-duddy to most people in the audience, but this stuff is illegal, right? I mean, do we have laws that say you can't do that?
Yes. Yes, it's still illegal, Scott. It's not as if, Donald Rumsfeld, John Yoo, all these, various, former, government officials who simply come up, draw up a piece of, a legal document, rather, get their attorneys to write a legal document saying they can do this, really doesn't make it legal. And, John Yoo redefining what torture is does not make torture legal. It's something simply that, just hasn't been challenged. Nobody has investigated. Other countries tried to investigate. And, this administration, the Obama administration, that is, has pressured those countries not to investigate. So I think that, ultimately when you determine that wrongdoing occurred, that requires an investigation. But the reason that they, that they can sort of stand up and say we didn't do anything is because nobody, has bothered to investigate. That's the problem. Nobody has held anyone accountable. Literally, no one has been held accountable. You've got the few, folks over at Abu Ghraib, but for the most part, no one has been held accountable for, torture, which is a war crime in the context that it was that detainees were subjected to, and it's illegal under domestic and international laws. I mean, we signed the Convention Against Torture. It's just unbelievable. And obviously, we're right back at this debate with Osama bin Laden and the fact that waterboarding worked. We obtained all this important intelligence from these detainees, and that's just simply not true. I mean, it's interesting. I had an exchange on Twitter, of all places, with former Bush speechwriter Mark Thiessen, who admitted, and this is important, Scott, because we had this discussion. He admitted that the torture and waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed wasn't to get intelligence. Okay, it was not to obtain any sort of actionable intelligence. Rather, it was done so he would become compliant. And that is something that I had hit on that with Jeff Kay in one of our previous stories, that this former survival evasion resistance escape officer, Captain Michael Kearns, who you had spoken to, that the whole torture program wasn't about really gaining intelligence. It was about getting these detainees to become dependent, to collaborate, to become compliant like animals. So that really strays from the narrative that the Bush administration had told us, and which we were, which we're still being told, back in, 2002 or whenever it was at this point. It's certainly a decade ago. That we needed to thwart pending attacks against the U.S. So we had to subject these detainees to, torture, what they called enhanced interrogation techniques. And here you have the former Bush speechwriter who's saying, no, they knew the answers. They knew the answers. This was just about getting him to become compliant.
Yeah, which then we saw in his confession where he took responsibility for global warming and World War II and everything else in
exactly.
the world that ever happened.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. And so, I feel that, I do feel that the documents that WikiLeaks has, just to get back to that, they're important because it gives us a real understanding as to, who these people, who are the people that were held there. But it's also important to put everything into context. And that's what's missing, Scott, is that context is not out there. We don't have any context as to how any of this intelligence was obtained. And I think that if we did, if we were able to obtain more of it, it would underscore how widespread torture was, how dominant a role torture played in every single aspect of, this program, the war on terror, everything, that the Bush administration started, that the Obama administration is continuing.
Well, that's the real context here that, I think is the most important truth of the whole discussion, is that just imagine what it would be like if Obama told Eric Holder to tell some U.S. attorney, this is your job now, put these men in prison, do your worst,
right.
Impanel a grand jury. Imagine the ridiculous comic book other reality we would have to live in, where there could be a rule of law that would be applied to the cabinet of the former administration, that these men would be prosecuted for violating their own laws. I mean, it was Reagan that signed the Anti-Torture Act and
and
the Republican Newt Gingrich Congress in the 90s, Newt Gingrich Trent Lott Congress in the 90s that passed the War Crimes Act. That couldn't happen in a million years from where we are today. It's a joke just to even mention it, really, like trials for these guys, looking backward instead of just forward. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it would never happen, but it's
funny.
That's
how far
gone
we are now,
It is.
We're way down at the bottom of the slippery slope.
Yes, and I don't think that there will be any time when we return. Look, I'm not even sure if we ever were in that place, previously. But the fact is that the crimes of the last administration were widespread. We know about many of them. Documents have been released. People have come forward. The fact of the matter is that there's just no interest in from our government, from the people we actually put into office, in holding anyone accountable. And let me tell you, Scott, as well, that there are going to be more documents that you'll see, in the weeks ahead, on Guantanamo, on torture, on things that are far worse than what we even know. And I can tell you that that's something that will absolutely be released. And I do think it will shake things up. I think the only thing, honestly, that will that it will take to perhaps get people to pay more attention to, maybe demand, prosecution or investigation, are videos, photographs. We really need to see that in order for it to, to make that kind of an impact.
I mean, they destroyed a lot of it. They destroyed the videos, and I guess if there are pictures, they're probably not official ones, but ones like that surfaced, like Abu Ghraib did, where individual soldiers were just having fun taking pictures, right?
Yes, I mean, there are, I can tell you this, there are many DVDs at Guantanamo on this immediate reaction force team, DVDs, videos, that are still there, in possession of the Department of Defense. And I think that if people looked at them, they would see that this was, we were brutalizing, the detainees, and really just looking for a reason to do so. Photographs, there are photographs in the thousands that, are in the possession of the Department of Defense, which is interesting because, this is what this administration had changed FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, to prevent those from being released. So there are things out there. I honestly don't know what they are. I've heard rumors, but they clearly are photographs, videos that the government doesn't want to see the light of day. I do think that we're close to seeing some of them, and I do believe that some photographs will be released. I have no idea what they will show. In addition to that, we continue to live with Guantanamo. In Congress, they're trying to pass a, legislation that will make it permanent, a permanent prison, that, they want to make sure that, detainees, there's been an offer for, detainees who are going to hold indefinitely, perhaps they can see their families. They don't want that to happen. I mean, as I indicated, there are 172 left, but, there are many who are innocent. We don't know why they're, the government's telling us that they're just too dangerous to release, or we can't try some of them. So, we really don't want to afford them any basic rights at this point. And I think that is, a major violation, of various international and domestic laws. So we're going to continue to deal with this, and I think it's really important for, the media, to continuously try to put this in context. I've been very disappointed with, the fact that the detainee files have simply been reported as, the information has not been called into question, or even challenged. And it's just been, reprinted as fact to show that they're the worst of the worst.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate the fact that not all of the media is AWOL on this story. There are very few people I can turn to on this subject. There's Andy Worthington and Daphne Abiatar and you, and I'm scratching my head. Very few are good on this issue, even care about it at all. So I appreciate all you guys work there at Truth Out on this subject.
Thank you so much,
it's
Scott.
One of the most important issues. I'm not letting it go. So
it will continue to stay out there in terms of bubbling up every now and then, but keep your eye out for some more documents, and I think that will shed additional light on as to what really happened and answer your questions as to how widespread torture was.
I absolutely will. All right. Well, thanks very much for your time. I really do appreciate
it. Thanks, Scott.
Everybody,
take care.
That's Jason Leopold. He's an investigative reporter and the deputy managing editor at truthout.org. He's also the author of the national bestseller News Junkie, a memoir filling in the gaping holes in WikiLeaks Guantanamo detainee files at truthout.org. Great stuff. Very important piece. Hope you look at it.